everyone. John was super sick during our regularly scheduled recording time this week. So instead, here is a live show that we recorded in St. Petersburg, Florida, the location of my alma mater, Eckerd College. So I spent a lot of time in St. Pete when I was younger. So we went back with my brother and my wife. We had a wonderful show. And here it is for you, Dear Hank and John, live in St. Petersburg.
Dear John and Hank, or as I like to call it, no. Dear Hank and John.
I knew it wasn't going to last forever, but it was wonderful while it did. Hi, I'm John Green. This is Hank Green. We answer your questions, provide you with dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars, a cold dead rock in space, and AFC Wimbledon, the single greatest achievement in human history.
John, an important question about Florida for Floridians. Why are the winds and hurricanes so fast?
I'm already disappointed.
Because if they weren't very fast, they would be slow-licanes. Because they hurry.
I get the joke. What I was disapproving of was the crown's approval. Just encourages,
this is, yes.
Encourages him.
They're on my side. Do you want to hear my... No. John sent me one this week. He was like, hey, what about this one? I was like, not good enough.
It was a good... Henry and I read a whole joke book together, and oh my God, I mean, they made Hank's jokes look like works of genius. And there was, however, one quite good joke in it. Why didn't the crab share his toy with his little brother? Because he was a little shellfish. It's cute and it's funny.
That's how you write a joke, John. You look at a joke book and steal it. if there's anything we've learned.
We should answer some questions from our listeners.
Do you want to do that?
This first question comes from Tavon, who writes, Dear John and Hank, my question is, how can I find the time to be an avid reader of books, a frequent listener of podcasts, a master's degree student, and a good citizen of the world? Mm. These are all the things that I love to do, and it always feels like I'm neglecting one to become immersed in others. My seat is in row F.
Hi, Tavon.
Hello. Yeah. This is for... Cheers. Cheers. I don't actually know where row F is. So.
Yeah, no. I don't know the answer to this question, except that some of these things, can you do them at the same time?
Yeah.
So part of being a good citizen when you live in Montana, less so in Florida, is shoveling your walk. And it's great. Audiobooks and podcasts while you're shoveling the walk, perfect.
If you do that here, by the way, people look at you super weird. You come out with the snow shovel every Tuesday and you're just like, gotta get it off. You know how it is. yes, double down. I think that's one solution. Uh-huh. And the other thing is that sometimes in life you have to prioritize and there ends up being things you can't do. And that's okay. Like, you can be a good citizen of the world without being an expert in everything. Like, you don't have to become, like, equally informed in all fields to be a good citizen of the world.
Or to tweet about everything. You can be completely ignorant of issues and still tweet about them, I've discovered.
No, it seems actually that not being an expert but having a strong opinion is kind of like the Twitter secret sauce.
So one thing you can do, Tavon, is to not be an expert and actually understand that. And I think that that's something that I work on, and then I think that, like, in this world we're sort of all asked to have opinions and be editors of the newspapers that are our social media feeds, that, like, it can be as if we are being asked to be experts, or that we have to assume that we are, or have to claim that we are, and it's very good to not be, and to shout to the world that I am not, and that I'm listening to people who know what they're talking about.
After a year and a half away from the social internet, which, by the way, stopped the clock on how long it took me to mention that I'm not on Twitter anymore. after a year and a half away from the social internet, one of the side effects for me is that I realize that I don't have a strong opinion on almost everything.
Yeah.
Like, when I hear something that's, like, almost definitely good news, I'll be like, that's probably good news, but, you know, let's wait. Who knows?
Let's see what Tuesday brings.
Yeah.
This was a great week for in the moment being like, I don't know what this means, but I'm definitely freaking out. And then being like, well, I was freaked. Is it all okay now? I don't know.
Oh, I missed all of that, by the way. Like, I just read the newspaper, and there was sort of a daily update about everything.
This next question comes from Cheyenne and Elizabeth in A11 and 12. Hey, you guys, do you want to dance for me? Thank you. We're two friends that go to UF, and I assume that this is Go-Gata? Because it looks like Go-Gata. And we're wondering if Cheyenne were to take her lower limb prosthetic and smack someone with it, would she be kicking them or hitting them? We've posed this question to many a person with no definitive answer, so we look to you to settle this debate. Well, if there's something that we are experts on.
Yeah. You've come to the right people.
It's exactly things what
that,
we're good at.
Things that mean nothing.
Yeah.
That are purely semantic.
Yeah.
And that will never have any relevance because of the unlikelihood of this overall scenario, right? Like, I don't know you.
Yeah, it could happen.
Oh, Cheyenne, how often do you hurt someone?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I guess, so the thing that is real is that you might have to say, I will hit
blank you
or kick you.
Yeah.
And you won't because you're not that kind of person, but you might be in a situation where you have to say the sentence. So that's a good point.
And what would then be reported to the judge? Like if we're in a court of law.
It's a hit with a foot.
What if we had a person come up to the stage and John took my leg and hit someone else with it, but I wasn't in control. I was unconscious at the time. I've gone unconscious.
That's a hit.
Someone comes on stage.
I hit
John
someone.
John lifts my leg.
Yes,
and whacks. He's very
that's
strong.
That's a hit. I hit someone with your unconscious leg. Absolutely.
But they were kicked.
No, nope. Oh.
You hit them, but they were kicked.
Yes. Yes. Butt is legs. But butt is also butt.
Yeah.
Both and.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hit and they get kicked. You're welcome. All right, we got another question. This person wrote in to say, Dear John and Hank, they're sitting in seat C27, wrote in to say, Dear John and Hank, what is the oddest combination of food you've stumbled on someone eating?
My son was eating pancakes recently, and he finished them. And then my father, for some reason, gave him some smoked salmon.
Yeah.
And I witnessed my son take the smoked salmon, put it on the fork, run it through the syrup, and eat it, and then back for more.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. So I tried it, and it was good.
I mean, yeah.
I think we don't do enough dessert fish.
I feel like maybe we do enough overall fish that we don't need to be, like, introducing new forms of fish into the concept of nutrition.
Yeah, no, we need to eat more flesh, John.
Yeah,
That's what they've all been saying.
God, yeah, more meat products for dessert.
Yeah, it's been a struggle for Steve.
The problem is not Steve. The problem is
right.
The humans.
Yeah.
One time, this actually inspired something in Paper Towns. One time when I was living in Orlando, Florida, I was at a Publix. It was very late at night. And I was purchasing beer, which is a reasonable purchase, you know, at that time. And the person in front of me was purchasing instant vanilla pudding, one container, one can of Campbell's tomato soup, and a live lobster. And I was like, you know, like, that guy is going to go home tonight, and he is going to eat a new dish. Like, there have been 93 billion of us. And this guy is going to do something genuinely novel.
The thing is, Like, he's bought two of the least expensive items in the grocery store.
And then he was like,
one of the most expensive.
Why don't I spend $60 on a lobster? That's the thing that makes no sense about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, you separate out any of those combinations, and I can kind of make sense of it. Like, maybe he's making some weird lobster bisque soup.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah,
but why the pudding?
No. Maybe, maybe he was going to feed the pudding to the lobster.
Oh, that's dark. That's dark. That's some foie gras darkness right there. I don't like that at all.
We need to move on. We need to move on.
Back when I was in college.
We're moving on.
Back when I was in college, here in St. Petersburg, Florida, we used to... We would throw chicken parts into the brackish pond. I was telling a professor of mine this earlier today. We would throw a chicken leg into the pond, and if you pulled it out slowly, 100% of the time there would be a blue crab on the end of it. And then we would put that blue crab into a steamer, and then we would pull out another one. And this is just like, I don't know how clean the ponds were at Eckerd College back in 1999, but we did eat a lot of those salty, peppery, steamed crabs, and we never fed them vanilla pudding. And I can't help but think maybe we missed something.
All right, we're moving on. We're going to move on to a different question that unfortunately is still about animals, but thankfully...
Different
kinds of animals. This question, and it was courageous of you to include your name in the question, and I applaud you for that, because many people have submitted anonymous questions, but you came out and you told us right that your name is, I believe, Leylin in seat C25. Oh, thanks. I'm glad I got it right. I practiced beforehand, so I'm glad I nailed it. Leylin writes, Dear John and Hank, recently something amazing happened. I got to see the movie adaptation of Cats. I have loved the musical since I was a kid. What should I do when I seriously love something that is so widely hated? Do I continue to love it unapologetically? Do I devote my life to try to explaining to people what a pellicle cat is? Do I write a paper defending my magical Mr. Mistopheles? I can't finish the sentence.
Is better than Rum Tum Tigger, is what it says there. At the end, Rum Tum Tugger. I'm sorry, I don't know very much about
cats. I love this question. I'm not familiar with the musical, only with the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt parody of it, which I found wildly enjoyable. So if it's anything like that, it's great. Look, you love something that millions of people hate, right? And they define themselves by hating it. And there are so, like, we live in that era. We live in the era of defining ourselves by what we hate and by what sucks, and, like, by figuring out what sucks and all hating it together. And we decide, oh, this art is unworthy and gross, and it's a complete failure. But, like, I actually think that of the things that have harmed the universe in the last, like, 8 weeks, like, the Cats movie is incredibly low on the list. You know what I mean? Like, Hank pulling a blue crab out of that pond was way worse for the universe than the Cats movie was, as far as I can tell. And you like it, and God, great. God bless you for... I think we should all like something that other people hate just so we can know what it's like not to be on a bandwagon.
Yeah. The other thing is that I think that it's part of having good taste and, like, having your taste be established, that sometimes, like, the thing you love runs counter to other people's interests.
Yes.
And that's, like, part of knowing who you are. And it's a great sign to be able to be like, oh, I like a thing that other people don't like. You can look at that and examine it and be like, what's different about me in this circumstance? But the main thing to know is that, like, you get yourself in a way that some people, like, it's hard to. So that's fantastic. Also, from the clips I've seen on Twitter, it seems amazing. A little upsetting, though.
here's my example of this.
What's yours, John?
I'm sure you have one too, Hank. So there were these three children's movies made called Madagascar, and they are about like zoo animals that escape to various wild places, and then the wild animals are like, you're not like us, and then they have to find a way to love each other. Every single one of these three movies existed for only one reason, which was to allow for the eventual creation of the greatest children's movie ever made, Penguins of Madagascar, the fourth Madagascar movie. It is such an accomplishment. It is such like a tremendous accomplishment about what life is like in the Anthropocene and about what we value and where the limits of our power are. And Werner Herzog is in it, and it is an amazing film. And if you go to IMDb right now, you will see that 75,000 people have voted on it and that they have voted it lower than every other Madagascar movie, each of which is crap. And so, like, these people are just mistaken. And, like, that is my aesthetic. And it's important for me to know what it is and to be able to defend it. And, like, now you're in a great position because you will be constantly defending your aesthetic because lots of people disagree with you.
This next question comes from Patrick. Patrick in P30. Hey guys, I was wondering, after 10 plus years of producing various content, was there a period when it was extremely hard to get through and you considered throwing in the towel? Can you tell us about that moment, Patrick says. Tell it, experience for us on stage in front of 600 people your worst.
I mean,
moment.
I considered throwing in the towel last night. There have been a few times for me. I mean, So this question presumes that there wasn't a time when I threw in the towel and you just didn't notice. And there have been times when I threw in the towel and you just didn't notice because, like, I was able to, like, carefully arrange for you not to notice. In 2015, I was in a really bad shape, mental health-wise, and had, like, three epically bad months and then three like fairly bad months during which I was able to make very little. I made a Vlogbrothers video every week, but like, you know, the whole week was kind of oriented around that, like, you know, that one day of work. I've never not wanted to make Vlogbrothers. Like, my motivation definitely ebbs and flows, but I know when it's waning that's part of
the
cycle
thing. Yeah, I likewise, I've never wanted to throw in the towel on, like, Nerdfighteria. There have been times when I've wanted to sort of, like, be like, YouTube, I'm done with you. What happened to this place? And that's, I think that's partly nostalgia. It's like the bad kind of nostalgia.
I mean, it is.
Like, looking back at a time when it was different and thinking that it was better when it was just different.
Yeah, it was bad. It's always been bad.
It's always been bad
in its own way, yeah.
For sure. And yeah. And I think that there's been frustration in that way, with sort of like how I imagine myself as part of a creative community, but not as how I imagine myself as part of like a creative endeavor with my brother. There have been times when I've wanted to throw in the towel on other things, of course, and have. And we've had a number of things that we've started and really wanted to succeed, and that they have failed. And then I try to bring back Truth or Fail for a fifth time, and it still doesn't work. And that's okay. And so, like, part of that is, like, the thing isn't working. And then sometimes I do realize that I've signed on for too much, and that it's not so much a throwing in the towel. It's a, what are the things that actually matter? What are the things that are going to enable me to be a functional person and, like, act and also be happy. And so it can sometimes be easy to take for granted the things you should be prioritizing in your life. And that's almost always the people that you care about. And in the moments when I've wanted to throw in the towel, it's usually been because I haven't been prioritizing the things that matter more.
Right. Same for me. I think 99% of your happiness in life is, is relational. And it's based on the health of the, you know, foundational relationships in my life. And when I feel like I'm neglecting that, I'm right, I'm correct to be concerned about that. But I want to say something else, Hank, which is that you talked about how you've brought back Truth or Fail six times and it's failed six times. And that's true. And it's and I look forward to reminding you of that when you call me about the seventh iteration of
your hit
game show Truth or Fail. But what it made me think about is that I would like just to ask the people here to make sure, because many of you will be alive after we are, to make sure that Hank's tombstone reads only creator of Truth or Fail and inventor of 2D glasses.
I don't know that they're going to be the ones in charge of that.
Oh, they will. They will. They will, and you're getting buried in St. Petersburg, whether you like it or not. I don't know if you've ever told the story. Can we tell the story?
I had the same. Are we thinking the same story?
Yeah, I assume so.
Yeah.
The one about dying?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if I should tell this story to an audience of Floridians, but I'm going to.
It's fine. It wasn't St. Petersburg.
It wasn't in St. Petersburg. So years ago, I was at a Harry Potter conference, and I became quite sick, and I had to go to the hospital. And I was in the hospital, and they were like, you're going to have to stay the night, and this is, you know, potentially quite serious. And I
we had left this Harry Potter convention in somewhat of a hurry.
Yeah.
I came out. We went to this hospital, and
the doctor was like, you know, we're gonna want you to stay the night. And Hank was with me, and I like literally grabbed the doctor's wrist, and I said, I do not want to die in Florida. I grew up here. I grew up in Orlando. I said it with love, but I did mean it.
Yeah, no.
And the doctor said, I don't think you're going to die. And I said, well, I don't think I'm going to die either, but I'm just telling you now that if I am going to die, I want you to put me in an ambulance and take me to the Georgia line.
All right, after this question, we're going to take some questions from the audience. So I'm going to call some people down. But first, I'm going to ask a question from Raunak. Sorry. As a 19-year-old stuck somewhere between childhood and being an adult, when does one reach adulthood and learn how to deal with adult problems? You only learn to deal with them by dealing with them. It's terrible. How do I figure out how to do this? And they're like, just do it. And you're like, I don't wanna, tell me. And they're like, just do it. Do it bad for 5 years and then do it good for the next 55 before you die.
I have a very different take on that question. Because I just remember like, A, it was new, but B, I felt like kind of congenitally unqualified for adulthood. Like I still don't know how to like fix things in the house, you know, or like I there's lots of things that I just don't know how to do, like lots of adult things that I don't think like I'm on the cusp of finding out how to wire a new sconce or even really knowing exactly what a sconce is.
Don't do electrician stuff. This is one adulthood.
No, Hank's advice is basically just do electrician stuff really bad for 5 years and then you'll get good at it. And I think that's bad advice. I think you should definitely not do electrician stuff unless you've gone to electrician stuff school.
Yeah, don't do electrician stuff.
Okay.
I
think that you become an adult the way that you become a lot of things, which is like slowly and sort of without noticing it. And it's only when one day, in my particular case, it was an event rather than a process, in the sense that I was putting on a pair of khaki pants, and I said to Sarah, I feel like I look like a middle-aged man in these pants. And Sarah paused for just like a little bit too long. And I realized it wasn't when I became a dad.
Yeah.
It wasn't when I got married.
Yeah.
It was when I put on a pair of pants and I looked like the middle-aged man I was. That I knew I was an adult.
Yeah.
All right, who's got the first question there?
Hello.
Hello.
It's Jarrell, not Gerald. That's okay. Everyone butchers it.
Great name.
Yeah, my dad says I was named after a character in a book. He never confirmed whether it was a Superman comic or not.
It sounds like it.
All right.
So what do we got?
So my question was, over the last 8 months, I've had a series of procedure. I got an amputation to better my life, and I got a new, very fancy prosthetic.
Excellent.
And, I mean, I'm pretty, low-key right now. with jeans and all.
Yeah.
And but I do have one problem though. Whenever I shift my weight on it a little bit, it totally sounds like I fart.
So it's can you provide an example?
Does it happen every time?
I can replicate it pretty easily.
Oh,
just like a little one.
Wait, yeah. Hold on, I could do better.
Yeah, no, that sounded like a nice like little a fart.
That sounds like a fart. Sounds like a fart.
And so the situation is that your leg sometimes farts, and that people are then going to assume that it was not your leg.
Correct.
But of course is legs. It's really all the same to me personally.
Hank doesn't recognize the distinction.
That's a very specific form of color blindness. That's just what it is. Is the question what to do or how to, like, should one explain the situation? Sorry, no, that was my leg. Got to have a sign or a card that you should have a card. Just business cards are very cheap to print out.
You should get a card. I once met a very tall person in the south of France, and I noticed that he was handing someone else a card, and so I asked if I could have a card. And he said yes, and he handed me a card, and the card explained that he was very tall. And that he had played basketball in high school, but not after that. And that he was done growing, and that there were no concerns about his height medically. I thought that was a wonderful solution. And I've also heard sometimes of famous people having little cards that they give people where they like answer all of the questions, you know, where it's like. David Tennant hands you a card, and he was like, "Yes, I enjoyed being Doctor Who. It was a blast. I am no longer Doctor Who. I am not Doctor Who in real life. I'm not a Time Lord." I like the idea of a card.
Yeah, you know, and you kind of know if you notice, people notice. You just pull out the card and be like, "I didn't fart." That's all it says. I didn't fart. That wasn't
super useful when you do fart as well. You know?
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. I'm glad we could help. Yeah. Who do we have?
Hello, this is Owen.
Hello, Owen.
Hi. So I was just graduated from college in May and am in my first year of teaching high school. And so one problem that arises due to both my young age and my young face is that I look about the same age, if not younger, than many of the students that I teach. And this both makes me self-conscious and sometimes causes some weird authority issues in the classroom.
Yep.
And so I am seeking dubious advice as to how I can appear older in a room full of 15 and 16-year-olds.
Can you give me the name of a 15-year-old? Just what's a good, what are they named these days?
Sebastian.
That's a great name.
Is Sebastian particularly troublesome?
Yes, yeah. He is. Oh,
I could tell.
Yeah. I got Sebastian pegged. I know that guy inside and out. Yeah. I know everything about him already.
So first, you know, there's a certain amount of authority issues where it's just like when Sebastian, you can just be like, "Sebastian, sit!" And just like treat him just like, to get him to sit. I don't know if he's standing up, but even if he is.
Your thing is to, like, treat them like dogs. Little,
yeah. Yeah, you know. You gotta show them.
Roll over!
Give me your paw!
Shake, Sebastian, shake! Right now! I'll give you a treat!
Other potential solution is a three-piece suit.
Yeah.
I do have a collection of very funky ties from thrift stores that I try to look dressed.
Funky tie, maybe get the
elbow patches.
An elbow patch or two. I don't know, probably two, now that I think about it.
Get three. Put one on your back, a couple on your knees.
Yeah.
One on the back of your head.
Yeah. Then I think the way you dress matters, but I also think, like, so I had a 22-year-old teacher when I was in high school, and I mean, it's inherently weird. I'm sure it was super weird for him, but he was a really good teacher, and I think that, like, the relationship was kind of inherently different, but there were also upsides to that, right? Like, he understood a little bit more about, like, my culture than most of my teachers did. Like, he was able to relate historical narratives to the present in ways that, like, you know, my teachers in their 80s weren't able to. So, like, he had a different kind of, like, authority. And I guess the thing that I would just say to you as an encouragement is that, like, to me, because he was just, even though he was just a few years older, like, he seemed so cool. Like, he knew everything, you know, like, he knew so much. But, and so that's where your authority really comes from, frankly, is the fact that, like, you know so much more than they do about whatever you're teaching. Like, you know, like, I remember one time I was walking around with my very smart, young, my best friend's incredibly smart young child, and he said, you know, JoJo, I know more math than you do. And I said, no, you don't. And he said, yeah, I do. And I said, no, it's annoying. I don't want to do this, Coleman. And he said, I do. And I said, all right, Coleman, what's the square root of 4? And he said, 2. And I said, well, all right, well, what's 3 cubed? And he was like, 27? And I was like, oh, I thought it was 9. It's 3 times 3. Damn it. Coleman, you do know more math than I do. But you're not in that position.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that, just yeah. quiz them.
and hope to God they don't outperform you.
All right, I think we were not helpful. Thank you. I've got one final question from the audience. Hello, sorry I made us not.
Oh, I love your shirt. Are you wearing Nun Pizza with left beef?
Yes, I am. It's the funniest thing ever. It's
my favorite meme turned into my favorite. Thank you for wearing my face on your torso as well. I appreciate it.
My honor. So my name is Becca. Last summer, I toyed with the idea of doing my PhD, and for 3 months, I was in a very quiet space all day long, all by myself. So I started taking an improv class at SAC Comedy Lab in downtown Orlando.
Yeah. I've been there.
And it is, like, the most wholesome, uplifting group of people. It is the most fun I've ever had. There is no going back. I have to do it forever now. Mm-hmm. But when I run out of classes in July, the only way to keep doing it is to make the ensemble. Mm-hmm. And assuming I do that, I will have to do shows on weeknights, and driving back to Cape Canaveral at night is very scary. How do I convince my husband to move to Orlando?
Oh, so you're done with commuting. You're done with commuting. Where are you now?
Wait, where are you now?
We're in a little town called Rockledge. We both work at Kennedy Space Center.
And it's what's like going on with the PhD?
Well, also,
I got a lot of questions.
Yeah. I mean, there's not... I don't know if you know, but there's no...
I go first.
Okay.
What's going on with your life outside of the comedy troupe?
I dropped the PhD. What happened with the PhD was my master's advisor was fantastic, and I wanted to keep working for him. But then I started the PhD, and it was wake up, coffee, 4 hours of math, lunch, 4 hours of math.
Yeah.
And it was too quiet. I was too.
Yeah, I would have been great at that, as you could probably heard earlier.
My husband was calling my improv class my extrovert support group.
So, yes. So did you say you were both working at the Space Center?
Yeah, it would be the same drive. It's about an hour.
Oh, so you would still commute to work from Orlando. Okay, because I was like, there are no Space Centers in Orlando
or anywhere else.
You're going to commute to the Space Center from Orlando?
It's a ways.
Our drive is already an hour up US-1. This would just be an hour on 520.
Oh, man, Florida life.
But we share the drive and we have podcasts.
I mean, I worked in Orlando and my commute was 45 minutes from my house in Orlando to my job in Orlando. Yeah. So
here's what I'll say, and believe you me, I am not getting in the middle of a marital conversation about where to live for the rest of your life, which is a huge decision.
You're not in the middle of anything. He's just finding out about this now.
Oh, great. Okay. Orlando is really, and like nobody is more surprised to say this than I am, cool. Like, Orlando is a wildly different place than it was during my childhood. In fact, like, Lake Eola was only sort of, like, tamed in, like, 1986. Yeah. Like, I was in elementary school the first time, like, Lake Eola had a sidewalk.
Yeah.
Orlando,
they finally got the gators out of it.
Yeah. Orlando is such a cool town now, and there are so many great neighborhoods there, and there are so many, like, there's, like, record stores, and, like, even, like,
craft breweries.
Yeah, like, where
a friend of mine from high school runs a weird, like, fancy deli. And I'm just like, Lexi, you have a fancy deli?
Yeah, they got, like...
You are an anarchist. Yeah.
You know, anarchists gotta eat, Hank. They gotta have governments, but they gotta have food.
Points.
So that's what I would say. If you're commuting an hour anyway, Orlando's a pretty cool place to live. They have an MLS team, I believe. It's pretty great.
So yeah. Do what's right for your family. But yeah,
The thing, like, a decision like that, though, the only thing I'd say is that, like, we made a big decision for different reasons, but a somewhat similar decision to move to Indianapolis from New York, where we had been living, and, like, I was a little reluctant to move to Indianapolis for Sarah's passion, because I just didn't want to live in Indianapolis. It turns out I love it and I'm very happy there. But in order for us to make that move and me not resent the fact that it was happening, we had to, like, come to a real deep consensus where it was our decision, not like I'm the trailing spouse and I guess I'll go along with this decision, because then it's so easy for resentments to build up if you don't keep those communication lines open. So good luck. It'll work out regardless. And if worse comes to worse, start an improv troupe wherever find yourself. Let's talk about the world's favorite third-tier English soccer team, AFC Wimbledon. AFC Wimbledon are clinging to their third-tier status, currently 19th. 19th in League One. We've still got one relegation spot between us and real relegation. So we're in good shape for now. Hey, can I go to a website real quick?
Yeah.
Oh. So,
it's fine.
Everything's fine. Okay. So the cool news.
They didn't expect me to. Oh! All right.
Look at that. That's AFC Wimbledon's new stadium at Plough Lane. For 25 years, Wimbledon fans have been singing, "Show me the way to Plough Lane. I'm tired and I want to go home. I had a football ground 20 years ago and I want one of my own." And they are building one owned by the fans. It is obviously not finished. Also, we don't have the money to finish it. But that is a problem for tomorrow. The reality for today is that we are closer than we have ever been to being back in Wimbledon, where we belong, owned by our fans, and certain to stay in that community forever. So it's really, really exciting to see that progress.
And in news from Mars, I didn't know we were doing the news segment, because we usually don't during live shows. So I have the Mars 2020 rover's looking great. It just looks so good. I follow some people on Twitter who got to go and look at it, and they seemed very impressed.
I actually have news from Mars.
Oh, God, I'm such a failure.
Because I've gotten kind of into Mars as a result of this podcast, I now get a lot of, I have a personalized news feed at the Google, and I get a lot of Mars news. And there was a study that came out, Hank, that said that Mars is losing water much quicker than was expected. Did you see this?
I have heard something about it. What I know is that the hydrology of Mars continues to be a big mystery, and we are learning things rapidly.
It's very weird. It's very weird. These methane blooms are very weird.
Mars turns out
to be a weird, active place where things are happening, but we don't really know which ones yet.
We need to get there and go there and learn.
But regardless, again, we are so, so grateful to you for being here with us tonight. It's been really fun to come back, for Hank and Catherine to come back to where they met and fell in love, and to see that place again. And for me to see that place, because I remember, like, when they were, first falling in love, and I remember coming here for Hank's graduation. And so it's really nice to be back here all these years later, finally feeling to a question asked earlier, like maybe I am a grown-up.
Thank you for listening to our St. Petersburg episode. Our live show coordinator is Monica Gasper. This podcast is a co-production of Complexly and WNYC Studios. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas and Sheridan Gibson, edited by Joseph Tuna-Medish, and our head of community and communications is Victoria Bongiorno. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. You can email us at hankandjohn@gmail.com, and as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.
Bye, guys.